This is The Meaning of Green, Season 4. I'm Vivian Thompson. In Season 1 of The Meaning of Green, my guests and I examined how we have managed to solve or not to solve major environmental problems, and we applied the policy lessons we had learned to climate change. Season 2 investigated the links between power, freedom, and the environment, and whether those links shed light on the coronavirus's emergence and spread. Season 3, which just ended, looked at place and the environment. We traveled to different locations in the U.S. and around the world, characterized their environmental issues and possible remedies, and explored connections with other places. The Meaning of Green is independently produced in Cedar Closet Studios in Silver Spring, Maryland, and has no sponsor. No outside entity influences the content of this podcast. Before I started The Meaning of Green, I was for 20 years a professor of environmental policy at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. Outside of academia, I have also been an environmental regulatory official in Virginia and at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. My 3 published books are about garbage transport, climate change policy in the U.S., Brazil, and Germany, and about who wields power and how when we regulate air pollution. You can find out more about The Meaning of Green and find links for all podcast episodes at the podcast's website, meaningofgreen.com. This is the preview episode for Season 4, which will start up in November 2022. Season 4 is about environmental protection during challenging economic times. In the U.S., the renewable energy and climate policy window just slammed open unexpectedly. Suddenly, the U.S. has a national renewable energy and climate law in the form of the Inflation Reduction Act. The Inflation Reduction Act's energy and climate provisions consist of tax code changes and funding that will flow throughout the U.S. economy. So, how did we land in this unexpected place? I outlined a few reasons in a 3-minute live BBC interview I did in early August. The link to that interview is on The Meaning of Green's website. Here I provide my 15-minute look at the questions, why this bill and why now? Counterintuitively, our economic hard times and our strong partisan divide both helped drive passage of the Inflation Reduction Act. And an important lesson from the 1986 Clean Water Act sheds light on why the law was adopted. First, I'll give you a general picture of the Inflation Reduction Act and what it might accomplish environmentally. I'll explain why the act was a surprise to advocates of climate action. Then I'll describe how energy prices, the distribution of costs and benefits, public opinion, and Republican recalcitrance helped produce the Inflation Reduction Act. The lesson from the Clean Water Act wraps up today's episode. The Inflation Reduction Act provides for loans, grants, and incentives estimated to total almost $400 billion. The U.S. government believes these measures will more than pay for themselves in avoided climate change impacts. The Inflation Reduction Act subsidizes fossil fuel use. The act is not as aggressive as some would have liked, but U.S. Democratic leaders decided that the perfect is the enemy of the good. It's thought that the Act's provisions will reduce an additional 1 billion tons of greenhouse gases in 2030 over and above the reductions already expected. 1 billion tons is a lot. That figure exceeds the annual greenhouse gas emissions of the entire country of Germany. This extra boost puts the U.S. on track to lower greenhouse gas pollution in 2030 by about 40% below 2005 levels. The procedural reason that Senate Democrats could pass the Inflation Reduction Act is that the act is a budget bill. The act contains only tax and spending provisions. There's no additional regulatory authority for U.S. government agencies like the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Budget bills can pass the U.S. Senate with a simple majority of 51 votes, which is exactly the number of votes the Inflation Reduction Act received. Here is Vice President Kamala Harris casting the tie-breaking vote.
The yeas are 50, the nays are 50. The Senate being equally divided, the Vice President votes in the affirmative, and the bill, as amended, is passed.
By contrast, a bill that amended, say, the Clean Air Act would need at least 60 senators in favor to even come up for a vote, and those 60 votes were nowhere in sight. No Republican in Congress voted for the Inflation Reduction Act. I'll circle back to that point. The conventional wisdom for years has been that any national climate law in the U.S. would limit greenhouse gas emissions directly or indirectly. Programs with direct limits face hard questions like what's the right cap to impose and which polluters should be covered by the cap. An indirect method advocated by some economists is a tax on greenhouse gas pollution. This is called a carbon tax. Carbon taxes are portrayed as a sort of silver bullet that supposedly brings quick, cost-effective results. But carbon taxes involve short-term economic pain for a lot of people in exchange for uncertain, long-term environmental gain. If global fairness or moral duty strongly motivated U.S. politicians, perhaps a national program to control greenhouse gases would have been adopted long ago. After all, it's estimated that the U.S. has contributed about 20% of all greenhouse gas pollution generated in the world since 1850. But Democratic and Republican politicians alike have balked at imposing costs on U.S. citizens and businesses for climate change benefits that will be shared around the world. And to see significant changes in our climate patterns, other big polluters like China and India must decrease their greenhouse gas pollution too. So how did a budget bill in the form of the Inflation Reduction Act manage to get around these political sticking points? First, let's look at energy prices. Americans of all political stripes are worried right now about the cost of energy. The Inflation Reduction Act offers incentives to improve energy efficiency and to use renewable energy. As a result, our energy bills should go down, and we'll be less captive to foreign powers who control oil supplies. The Inflation Reduction Act aims to stimulate domestic renewable energy employment and industries. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, who blocked previous versions of the Inflation Reduction Act, stresses the act's anticipated impact on energy prices. Here's Senator Manchin just after President Biden signed the act into law.
The name that I came up with was the Inflation Reduction Act because tell me another time that we basically paid down debt. We provided more energy, lowered the prices at the pump, we should, lowered the prices at your home, which we should, by putting more product into the market.
Senator Manchin champions the act's concessions to fossil fuel companies and an extension in health benefits for coal miners suffering from black lung disease. A second factor in getting environmental policy windows to open concerns the magnitude and distribution of costs and benefits. Laws that deliver near-term benefits for lots of constituents are politically appealing. Such laws become even more attractive if their costs are pushed to the future for a small, vaguely defined group. The Inflation Reduction Act supports are available to many, many people and businesses. Incentives and credits are authorized for 10 years, thus providing a measure of certainty and stability. Just to give a few examples of these supports, utility companies can earn tax credits for renewably based electricity generation or for capturing carbon dioxide pollution from fossil fuel power plants. Farmers and forest landowners can take advantage of incentives to adopt climate-friendly practices. Consumers can receive tax credits or rebates for installing high-efficiency heating and air conditioning equipment or for purchasing electric cars. The list goes on and on. But there's a strong element of social fairness in how these incentives are distributed. Some incentives are limited to families with incomes below certain thresholds. The Inflation Reduction Act gives special treatment to coal communities and to disadvantaged communities. Fairness also plays a role in how the Act's outlays are paid for. New revenues come from cracking down on tax dodging by the wealthy and from closing corporate tax loopholes that let some corporations pay little or nothing in taxes. One credible estimate shows that fewer than 150 large corporations might be affected by the new corporate minimum tax. But the law is unclear on how the U.S. government will implement these new tax policies and thus exactly who will be affected and how. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi referred to several of these points in her remarks during the House's debate on the Inflation Reduction Act.
Underserved communities mean $60 billion in environmental protection, environmental justice initiatives to ensure that everyone enjoys the benefits of a cleaner green economy. The bill pays down the deficit by $300 billion in the first decade. Here's what it means to you. What it means, slashing the deficit, drives down inflation in the long term. These monumental investments are for families and healthcare are fully paid for, ensuring the biggest corporations and wealthiest pay their fair share.
So, to sum up the distribution of the Act's costs and benefits, many, many Americans stand to benefit financially from the law's provisions. And the law's costs are shifted to a few corporations and to a few very wealthy, tax-dodging individuals whose identity is unknown right now. Another factor that helped push the Inflation Reduction Act over the finish line is the decline in the amount of electricity generated by coal. Fewer members of Congress feel obligated to protect coal interests than before. Okay, let's move on to public opinion. Americans on all parts of the partisan spectrum approve of incentives or tax credits for energy efficiency and renewable energy. Democrats are more enthusiastic about such policies than are Republicans. The new climate change and renewable energy law could help get Democratic voters to the polls in the upcoming congressional elections. And the law's special attention to communities of color might also boost voter turnout. Hispanics and African Americans are more alarmed about climate change than are white Americans. Now let's come back to the fact that no Republican in Congress voted for the Inflation Reduction Act. That's a stark contrast to the bipartisanship we saw with the last major clean air law adopted in the U.S. The 1990 Clean Air Act, a very strong law, passed with lopsided votes in the U.S. Congress. Only 10 senators, 5 Democrats and 5 Republicans, voted against the 1990 Clean Air Act. Some deeply conservative Republican senators like Mitch McConnell of Kentucky and Strom Thurmond of South Carolina voted for the 1990 Clean Air Act. Republican President George H.W. Bush held a press conference after the signing of the 1990 Clean Air Act.
My own staff, they did a great job on this. And I also want to thank the senators and the members of Congress from both sides of the aisle. The list is too long to single out everybody from the Hill that worked on this. But again, I just want to thank you.
Further, the R in renewable energy could stand for Republican. Over 60% of the U.S.'s wind power capacity is in states like Texas and Iowa that went for Trump in 2020. But only a few Republicans in Congress have voted yes on climate legislation, even a 2003 proposal co-sponsored by Republican Senator John McCain. Clearly, today's Republican members of Congress don't think they will be penalized by voters for opposing climate action and renewable energy supports. Senator Manchin says he tried hard to bring Republican colleagues to his side. But in the end, Democrats saw a budget bill as the only possible vehicle for climate change legislation. And they fear losing control of Congress in the upcoming elections. So our partisan divide helps explain why we got this particular law at this particular time. One thing Republican and Democratic members of Congress have agreed upon is giving power to the states for implementing national environmental programs. The Inflation Reduction Act follows this pattern. For example, the new law provides funding for state-level programs aimed at reducing greenhouse gas pollution, and state energy agencies will implement the consumer rebate programs. When I first read the Inflation Reduction Act, I was reminded forcefully of a lesson I learned when I was a young EPA analyst back in the mid-1980s. Incredibly, the 1986 Clean Water Act was supported by every member of Congress, and it was enacted over a veto by President Ronald Reagan. But attempts to revise the Clean Air Act, at the time, had languished. A friend who was a congressional staff person said, well, thus far, the Clean Air Act is all about forcing polluters to absorb new costs and change their ways. The Clean Water Act showers lots of grant money all around the country to clean up polluted water. So members of Congress get to take home money and environmental benefits. With the Inflation Reduction Act, Washington Democrats have lifted a page from the Clean Water Act playbook. It's deja vu all over again, as baseball player Yogi Berra supposedly once said. I'm Vivian Thompson. Thank you for listening to The Meaning of Green.